Oh my god,
he's back again.
Okay, hello and welcome back to Out of Print, a cultural podcast a culture podcast with a literary twist. I am joined by my two best friends. This is actually, I can't do it. I'm Alice.
I'm Emmeline.
And I'm Sophie.
And this week we have Emmeline hosting. Hi, Emmeline.
Woo-hoo.
What have you got for us today?
I really wanted a noise, but I didn't know what the noise, you know, to like, like woo, or like yeah, or I don't know.
Yeah.
I want a button that I can press that can be introductory.
We do need buttons.
Yeah.
That's definitely a season two thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you've got this far and you're still with us, you will be rewarded by the prospect of sound buttons in season two.
More sound effects in season two.
It's good. I'll ask you how you are and see what's up, and then I'll spring the topic on you.
You don't sound very excited to ask.
How are you?
I suppose I'll ask how you are.
How are you?
I'm fine.
We're all sleepy.
My question to Sophie is, what on earth were you doing at the weekend? What was that
exhibition? I did see some pictures of this, and I also have questions, so thank you for bringing that up.
Okay, yeah. So I was at an exhibition by this guy called Boris Mikhailov, and it's called Ukrainian Diary. And it was, some of the pictures were amazing. The photos were beautiful, and it's really interesting. The guy does loads of cool stuff where he develops his pictures and then colours them in with felt tips, and he's really into the idea of bad photography and what does it mean to take a bad photo and stuff like that. And then we like turned the corner in the room, and then there was like an entire wall just covered of this sort of old guy just brandishing a dildo. And like,
oh, it was a dildo.
Yeah, he wasn't.
I thought that he was
because it also looked a bit ribbed. It looked a bit bumpy.
Well, he was obviously holding it in a very deliberate way. But the idea of the exhibition allegedly was he was playing with the traditional confines of post-Soviet masculinity and all this stuff. Honestly, it's a little bollocks. But
like, literally a little bollocks.
Yeah. But the rest of the exhibition was absolutely amazing. But yeah, I posted a picture of it on my close friend's story, and a lot of people messaged me, some people being like, what the fuck? And then other people being like, where is that?
Like, really? Close friends is so telling. I feel like who you have on there, what you put on there, and the way in which you interact with people via your close friends on Instagram is actually a pretty interesting metric for someone's social circles and stuff that they do in their private life.
Because I use it very sparingly. Because I feel like if I'm putting something online, I want everyone to see
it.
Because people
can know.
everyone can know.
Well, to be fair, Alice, you don't hide much of what other people hide from your personal life.
No.
I mean, you have a column in the newspaper where you write about your sex life.
A little bit.
Graphic.
Sometimes. Yeah, much to my partners.
The world is your close friend.
The world is my close friend. I don't need
a close
friend.
We should get that written on a t-shirt for you.
Yeah,
I mean, all the t-shirt ideas come up lately. I was feeling a bit existential this morning because I got on the tube trying to figure out how the fuck you pronounce West Ryslip.
Ryslip.
Is that how you say it?
Ryslip.
Confusing. And then I was just, I got a bit like dark looking at the adverts on the tube, which are always whack, but there was one for the new iPhone, there was one for like a whiskey brand, and then there was one that was like, men, why are you so hormonal?
I've seen that. The male hormones.
But the trio of adverts, I was just like, oh, it's, you know, it's 2026, this is the world we live in.
Have you seen the Ricky Gervais advert?
Yeah, no, that was one of the whiskey.
Where he's like
the
this.
Whiskey. Is it whiskey? Yeah.
Drink my whiskey or don't. I don't give a fuck. Fuck off. I'm Ricky Gervais. I've got loads of money. And like, all the adverts are really weird and like, don't describe the product at all. They're so horrible.
It's so, yeah. And I feel like on the central line particularly, I always feel so existential when I'm looking at everything. And then, yeah, that particular combination of images just didn't sit well with me this morning.
Oh, I mean, I've been doing a lot of, I mean, this is very relevant to what we're about to discuss, but a lot of ads on the tube, I'll be looking at them and thinking, is that AI generated? Like, I feel like every image I see at the moment, including in, I was reading an edition of The Face, and a load of the pictures in it, I'm pretty sure, were AI generated. I feel like I spend so much time now scrutinizing images and looking probably more carefully than I would have looked pre-AI. And especially on the tube, there are, like, the harder you look, the more you look, the more uncanny valley stuff there is.
Yeah. You know what I got by the other day? Have you seen the Croydon Aquarium stuff?
No. Oh, you got, I mean,
it's so niche. I mean, it was basically just like a bunch of men, I guess, from South London in the aquarium. I'm going to have to show you this.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Oh, that's kind of sick.
Wait, but is that real?
But this is exactly it. It's not real.
Oh, it's... Oh.
It's not real. It's AI. And I was like, whoa, that's crazy. When did they get all these guys in the aquarium?
For our listeners who cannot see our phone, Sophie just showed us a video of basically a bunch of men in Adidas trackies in the fish tank at an aquarium. And it's titled Croydon Aquarium.
It's pretty good.
The AI image conversation is extremely relevant to what we're talking about today. This episode, I've called it an ode to the M-dash. So let me, it's going to get a bit grammatical.
Okay, exciting.
If we can handle that on a Monday evening, not to give away our where we're at mentally, physically.
Woo!
Woo! What is the M-dash?
Sorry, I thought that was
Give her a minute.
I didn't realize that was a rhetorical question.
I never usually do rhetorical questions. I didn't like it when I said it, and I knew because I locked eyes with you that you thought I was asking
you. Yeah, but you're asking me what it is.
Best in class.
And I was going to be like, me.
You go, girl.
I know what an M-dash is.
Why don't you tell me and then I'll tell you again.
It is a long dash. It's like a hyphen on steroids. Like it's like a very long hyphen. And isn't it because there's an N dash and then there's an M dash.
Yeah, and do you know why they're called M dashes and N dashes?
Is it related to Emily Dickinson?
No.
Oh.
But that actually also literally perfectly encapsulates what I'm about to talk about. But so, you know, keep that in the brain. But it's not. It's because the M dash is the size of a letter M.
Oh.
And the N dash is the size and length of a letter N.
Yeah, because it's like half. Yeah,
good
which fact. I think is cool, and it kind of functions as like a comma, but it's more of a interruption. I don't know.
It's more specifically. So it's the longest of three dashes, so called because it's the length of letter M. It separates information from the main clause of the sentence, signifying language which might need to be amplified or additional information or parenthetical elements or like a change in the direction of a sentence. It's commonly used as a kind of aside and has previously been associated with more elevated, elongated prose or experimental forms or prose that requires significant asides of information, so maybe more technical usage. But with the rise in generative AI, we have also seen the rise in the use of the M-dash in mass-produced text, seen as a shortcut to information. For example, it's now a telltale sign that your CV has been written by ChatGPT.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in this episode, it's like a personal gripe that I have, and I want to advocate that I think it's a shame because, A, I love to use the M-dash myself, but also I think it represents a more whimsical and sometimes emotional, I'm going to sound like a sap, emotional relationship writers have with grammar that can be kind of like beautiful and I'm not a grammar stan before we get into this because I can easily be put into that category, I'm sure, after this argument. And it's not because I believe in rules and regulation, but I think I like grammar because sometimes I feel like it's like breaking rules and it's the uniqueness of someone's speech and writing style that grammar can really help to communicate. And I just think it's a particular shame that this piece of grammar has gone wayward with the AI conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And to pair that conversation with some text, I want to talk about Emily Dickinson because she is known for her use of the M-dash.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose I want to argue that I believe her use of the M-dash to be completely antithetical to ChatGPT's use of mm-hmm. Mdash. You guys, what are you saying about Emily Dickinson? Are we familiar? Are we, what's the level of familiarity and love there?
Not very familiar, I have to say. I don't think I've ever really read her.
Did you study her at uni?
I didn't.
I think I did a little bit. But...
I did. Right, let's lower the expectations right now. I wrote an essay on it, but when I was 18. I wrote an essay on Emily Dickinson's use of the M-dash.
Oh, no way.
When I was 18. But then, you know, we're going back 8 years now, and I've blunted my brain with, you know, alcohol-induced trauma.
Yes.
For a good few years, and I do not remember anything in it. So I'm your willing student.
Okay, beautiful.
I remember liking her.
So, like, a potted history. Emily Dickinson, I guess one of the world's most famous poets by name. You know, she's known by name. Born in Amherst in Massachusetts in the early 19th century. And known for, is this sort of like a musicality and occasional, yeah, whimsy to her work. She's extremely considerate of pauses. Her poems are known for what is left and what is unsaid, what needs a break. She littered her physical manuscripts with the M-dash, which was actually, has been a new thing, I say new, I don't know, in the past like 50 to 100 years, editorial thing, that initially those M-dashes were seen as her maybe working out what she wanted to say and were eradicated from the manuscript. But now it's part of what an editor would consider to be their job when editing Emily Dickinson, when publishing it, to really pay attention to where she puts those marks and what they suggest to a reader. There's a critic who I think is called Beth Towell. She calls it the sound of interruption, which I love. And she actually has a strong argument connecting that sound of interruption to a working class existence, which is Emily Dickinson's background, and the interruptions of life that come when you come from that background. And for Emily Dickinson, I think poetry was an escape for routine and for a mundane existence. You know, it was rare for women to be writing in that capacity and publicly at that age. And there's a lot of conversations that suggest that maybe she was homosexual and that she had a relationship, I think, with... This could be really wrong, but I think the woman that she's supposed to have had feelings for was her brother's wife.
Ooh.
It's something like that. And one of her more famous poems is called... nice, cheery stuff. Well, a lot of her poems don't have titles because they take the first line of them for the title, if that makes sense.
Mm.
So I Felt a Funeral in My Brain is one of her most well-known poems.
Sorry, can I quickly ask?
Yeah, yeah.
You might have already said, and it went over my head, but when was she writing?
Early 19th century.
Early 19th century.
Okay. Yeah, so 1800s.
Got it.
Yeah.
Victorian.
Exactly. I Felt a Funeral in My Brain, which, yeah, is so nice and so cheery. But just so you can see what I mean about her use of the M-dash, I'm going to read that poem. It's super short. Everybody, don't worry. And I'm going to click where she uses an M-dash.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a sense of the what we're calling that sound of interruption in her poem, but without reading it on the page.
Mm-hmm.
I felt a funeral in my brain, and mourners to and fro kept treading, treading, till it seemed that sense was breaking through. And when they were all seated, a service, like a drum, kept beating, beating, till I thought my mind was going numb, and then I heard them lift a box and creak across my soul with those same boots of lead again. Then space began to toll, as all the heavens were a bell, and being but an ear, and I, and silence, some strange race, wrecked, solitary, here. And then a plank in reason broke, and I dropped down and down and hit a world at every plunge and finished knowing then. Thoughts?
Pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ones that stood out to me was around treading.
Yeah, that beautiful bit where she's keep treading, treading, and that bit about keep beating, beating. There are
Yeah, like, it's very rhythmic.
Yeah, sort of syntactic parallels and rhythmic parallels in the work. And she talks about, you know, drum. And this is a poem about, I mean, it's a poem about a lot of things, but it's about it's contemplating death and existence and the cycles of life that we go through. And I don't know, I just feel like there's something so beautiful in her use of elision, like what is left out and what she suggests. And that M dash is rhythmic and it's philosophical and it's, yeah, it just helps you get into the poem in a different way than you might if those little black lines were left out.
Yeah, I think purely from like a sort of cinematic perspective, with the like pauses between treading, there's almost like space for the foot to come up and take its next step, which is really nice.
Yeah.
And I think in our modern era, in which I feel every space is full, every moment of our time is occupied either by information that we're consuming via a screen or work, or we live in a city, so it's like constant stimuli. I feel like I can see how her poetry would be particularly pertinent now with the way in which she embraces those pauses and those empty spaces, because we don't have empty spaces anymore, really.
No, and I feel like we're asked so repeatedly to not have space. Like, when was the last time you saw someone? And also, doesn't it look weird now if you see someone on the tube, no headphones, no book, no phone, not chatting to anyone, if they're just
dogging.
Sat there? And that space, that's time to let your mind kind of breathe and sink in. I'm so guilty of it myself, but I feel like we don't give ourselves space in that way.
I love stimulus.
Yeah, yeah. Most people do.
I love those videos on TikTok where the other half of the screen is the Subway Surfers video.
Oh, yeah. I remember I once showed, I think it was my dad, like a video of Bradley Cooper talking on a talk show and then like a man chopping Play-Doh at the same time. And I couldn't really explain to him what was going on. Mm. And I just felt like that's a very new thing for your brain to be able to understand.
Yeah, I feel like you two in particular I associate with like stimuli and being stimulated. You're both like busy doing active all of the time, whereas I feel like I'm
cozy,
maybe a bit better at embracing
definitely
the like crochet is a very kind of mindful activity. I'm happy to raw dog my walk without headphones.
I'd hate to do that.
Yeah.
In some ways, there's kind of, I guess, rhythmic similarities between, like, the crochet process and this poem. Not to get too fucking waffly with this. But do you know what I mean? As in, like, the clicking of, like, the gap between the next click of the needles and then the whole time you're, like, creating something and it's getting longer. But you need the like, pauses in between in order to, like, loop the structures together.
Yeah, and it's an interesting debate in her poem about whether these pauses are provide rhythm and provide stability and grounding and space, or whether they provide interruptions. And that's quite a it's quite a prominent
those
debate.
Are quite opposite things, aren't they?
Yeah, with Emily Dickinson.
Death isn't, this is really deep, but like death is the ultimate interruption.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Someone dies, like that's the ultimate.
Alice just made the physical gesture of an M dash. Yes,
I'm leaving space. But yeah, I think
you're entirely correct.
It is interesting that people can't decide if is it an interruption or is it space. And
I'm so like, it's such a Monday evening that I feel like that made me want to cry. It was just so beautiful. I'm not gonna cry. I'm gonna get my
shit. If you cry,
together.
I'll cry.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of interesting to look at it from the perspective of why you would put a dash at the end of the text.
Exactly.
Is she running off?
Exactly.
What is it? Is it silence? Does she want you to take it in for a second?
Well, it all comes back to exactly what you said. Is that sound or that lack of sound? Is that suggestion? Is it a death? Is it a continuation or is it an interruption? And I feel like there are so many, I don't know, contradictions that you can read into this piece that give it quite personal resonance. I feel like you can kind of read what you want sometimes into her poems, and I feel like that's why people might like them so much, that they give back to their readers in a way.
They're not prescriptive.
But also like the best films often have kind of ambiguous endings. Like one of my favorite movies ever is The Sound of Metal with Riz Ahmed. Have you guys seen it?
I think we saw that together.
Oh yeah, we did, in Oxford around COVID times.
I watched that, the first half of that, when I was having hearing problems with my ear. I remember.
Oh, and I remember that.
Yeah, and then I had to be like, do you know what? This is not the time to watch this film.
It's quite sad.
It's really sad. I was pouring a lot of olive oil in your ear.
I'm not sure this is something I want the people of the podcast to know about.
Emmeline's one. Like, what's it? Achilles heel.
It's my ear.
Hamartia. It's your ear.
Sore ears. Yeah.
Which is unfortunate as a musician.
It's really unfortunate. I'm worried about it. I have to protect it. But the really weird thing that happened at that time was that I lost, it must have been stress related, when we sat our horrible, horrible end of year exams, which were in the 2021. So in the, like, reverberating aftermath of COVID, we had to sit them in our rooms for 8 hours at a time, and it was all just like stressful and weird. And in that week I lost hearing in my left ear, and it came back when I sat down to sit my final exam. It was like a pop, and all of a sudden I could hear it. It's so weird.
You,
like,
locked in.
The body is odd like that.
The pop is like, that reminds me of, it's the M dash,
the pop. Oh, life again,
sitting down.
I constantly get taking the piss off because my boyfriend at the time, I remember ringing up one night and I was like, I can't hear anything. And he said, what? And I said, I can't hear anything. And he said, I think you can.
Oh, God. Sorry, to just bring it back to The Sound of Metal real quick. There's like a point at the end of the film where, I'm just going to spoil it. If you've not seen it now, you're not going to watch it.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah, go.
I just mean generally.
For the people listening. I forget that other people are listening.
They might not be.
It's just us three.
Yeah. At the end of the film, all that happens is he basically turns his hearing aid off after fighting to get the surgery to get his hearing back, and then just walks out onto a busy street, and the noise just slowly, like, tones down. Whoa. And it's totally ambiguous as to whether he's going to live with some hearing or go totally without or go back into the deaf community. But the fact that the film chooses to end on that silence and you're then embodied within that world, it's so nice. And that's what I mean about leaving the door open and having like a space or a kind of quiet moment at the end of something. Mm. People love that. That's a marker of great art, I reckon.
I believe so as well. And I guess one of the other things I wanted to talk about in relation to Emily Dickinson and the M dash is this whole conversation about AI and grammar really trips a conversation about art and nature. And I think Emily Dickinson represents or writes a lot about sort of human and maybe quite feminine connection to the earth and to nature, and how I maybe think ChatGPT is antithetical to what we might consider to be the very supported relationship between, like, eco-critical considerations and our human creative output, if that makes sense.
Mm.
And, you know, I Googled this morning, I looked up because I felt like it was useful for this, how bad for the environment ChatGPT is. And generative AI told me itself that a single ChatGPT search uses 10 to 30 times more energy than a standard Google search. So there's, I mean, I don't need to go into all the facts relating to, I feel like people are pretty aware of how bad it is for the environment, but there's that simple facet. Of Emily, we think about her fascination with what it means to be human as being understood through, like, the probing of nature. That's what she writes about a lot. So there's this beautiful poem that she has, which the first line of it is, I started early, took my dog. And she basically just says, I started early, took my dog and visited the sea. The mermaids in the basement came out to look at me. And she's sort of describing just a walk along the beach with her dog, and sort of whether or not she's going to be taken by the sea and by this image. And I feel like I always read quite something sexual in the poem, or something about longing to be touched, which I also really relate to her use of the N dash, this idea that she's like trying to get close to something and and be with it. So I'll just read this little bit out to you. So yeah, so the water then begins to rise in the poem. She says, "I'm past my apron and my belt and past my bodice too." And that these M dashes in the poem are a form of like linguistic teasing. So each clause like stutters and starts, but ultimately refuses contact with its neighbouring partner. Yeah, she's edging the reader. It's building a tension that's compounded by these like elements of language that spotlight these, you know, common nouns. She's talking from the same semantic field. She's talking about aprons and belts and bodices. And when you read that poem and you read that section of the poem, I always feel like, yeah, there's something sort of sensual and of desire and of longing that is expressed through that little piece of grammar. And it's part of her desire to be enfolded by her. And I feel like I'm talking a lot of bullshit today. Is everyone with me?
No, okay. I like it. I'm rocking with it. I was laughing because you're describing it so beautifully, and Alice going, yeah, edging. All right.
I kind of just like zoned out of what I was saying for a second. I was like, well, there's a bit of wank in there, but
I think it's nice. No, I'm with you.
I just think there's this desire to be close to nature and close to the landscape. And again, not to like shoehorn a point too much, but I just feel like that's the opposite of what the M dash represents to ChatGPT, which maybe we should talk about for a minute. Have you seen that in mass produced work? Have you seen that M dash and being like, massively. Oh yeah, I know where that's come from.
When I was hiring for a social media manager a couple of workplaces ago, you have to write a cover letter because it's a creative role. There's a lot of writing and stuff involved in it. And people are probably going to get annoyed at me for this. I threw out every single cover letter where I could tell immediately from a glance that it was written with ChatGPT.
I think that's valid.
Because I was like, if you're going to be a copywriter and you can at least visually, as in like on an aesthetic, like first glance level, be bothered to take out the M dashes, then why should I hire you for a creative role?
Yeah. But then coming specifically back to that point about the M dash, that's such an our point of anxiety for me. I write with it frequently, same. It's not necessarily common practice, but I guess it's just a habit that I developed at university. And I know I don't always use it correctly, but it's kind of just become part of my like idiosyncrasies as a writer. I'm aware that I often use it, even sometimes when I'm taking notes and stuff. So maybe I just need to check myself more. But now I'm like, oh shit, that thing that I use that represents something that I'm trying to do that's interesting or like is personal to me is now a symbol of something that is not personal to anyone.
I think a lot of writers have like felt the same way, and like likewise I use the M dash very liberally and I often have to edit it out even before AI to like go through my pieces and like edit some of them out anyway. But apparently, I don't have a source for this. This is just something that my partner was telling me, so could be untrue. It could be misinformation. But apparently AI has now learnt that people associate M dashes with things written by ChatGPT.
Oh, really?
Therefore, it's started to learn not to use them as much, probably because people have been getting it to write things and then being like, don't sound like AI, you need to take the M dashes out. And I think it's been trained. So now the M dash is, it's like with trends. It's almost like a linguistic trend that ChatGPT was hopped
that's
on.
That's fine. We'll reclaim the M dash.
I think bring it back. Reclamation bring it back home. It's within reach.
I mean, I once got a lengthy apology text from a boy, which contained an M dash in it. And I literally was walking around my house for 2 days like, do I have the balls to text him and be like, did you apologize to me via ChatGPT? Because I won't take it.
Well, do you want to know something really harrowing?
Oh, no.
I watched a pal of mine write a Valentine's Day card for his girlfriend using ChatGPT.
No.
I know.
Did you pull him up on it?
Well, I was like, oh, for God's sake, just write Happy Valentine's Day in it at that point.
Yeah.
They did split off like 2 weeks later.
Oh, well, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah. I was like, oh, come on now, brother.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the thing on the topic of people outsource their creative pursuits to AI. Like, that's one thing. Mm. And then the next level up from that is people outsourcing apology texts, Valentine's Day cards. And I saw a friend recently who, she was dating this guy for 3 months, like as a very short flash in the pan sort of situationship in which he love bombed her. He was in his mid 30s, by the way, just for context. And basically he admitted to her about maybe like 8 weeks into dating that he had been using ChatGPT to analyze her text messages.
Oh God.
And he had subsequently become more and more paranoid. Like, the root of the issue is that he was paranoid and didn't trust her.
Oh God.
At all. And he was, and you know, sort of AI psychosis, this idea that people are getting lost in information that ChatGPT is giving them, and it's false information, and all of these horrible psychological ramifications. But she thinks that he sort of descended into a bit of an AI psychosis loop because he was paranoid. But because ChatGPT tends to just confirm or affirm whatever it is you're saying, even if it's like trigger warning, like even if it's like to harm yourself, she thinks that if he was already paranoid, then ChatGPT was just confirming his paranoia to him, and it was becoming a feedback loop.
Well, I rarely use it. I've maybe used it like 5 times for different things. But obviously, I didn't realise, and it freaked me out the other day when I logged on, that it sort of retains information.
It remembers.
And I asked it a question the other day, and it was like, oh, well, of course you'd ask that as a creative London-based... What?
Yeah.
You don't know me. What? That's insane.
But a lot of people love that. Like, people talk about, like, oh, I love my chat. I love my ChatGPT. I've trained them so well.
And it's scary as well, because it's not just retaining it on your personal one, because you're sending that information out into the ether. So if I was to Google, who is Emmeline? And, you know, and you typed in maybe a certain bio about yourself into chat, then it can...
Really?
Yeah. So you just got it, like, having private chats and, like, having locked off company ones. Because there was a massive issue a few years ago where developers were just uploading entire code bases into ChatGPT and saying, help me, you know, fix my code out. Is there any issues with my code? But then the IP was then just uploaded into a public forum, and then all of the code that they'd spent, you know, tens of thousands of pounds on, just like out the window. Yeah.
Maybe I should just start sending it Emily Dickinson poems.
But then you're trying to protect your precious M dash, though.
I know, that's true. I don't want it to start writing to me as Emily Dickinson, which it probably would start to.
Yeah, that's not a good idea.
I mean, I think I know we're not at the point of summarizing necessarily, but...
No, we can start summarizing.
I feel like the crucial difference between Emily Dickinson and her use of the M dash and ChatGPT and sort of LLM AI generated use of the M dash.
I actually don't know what LLM means.
Large language model.
Oh, okay.
It's what ChatGPT, Claude, Copilot, they're all LLMs.
Yeah.
Is, you know, Emily Dickinson is using the M dash as a means to touch grass. AI, people who are overusing AI, that's what they need to do, but they're not. They're sequestered inside their little digital bubble. They are not accessing nature. They are not touching grass. They are not yearning for touch at all. They're sort of just
But insular. I think they are, though. Like, I think it's such like a... like a simulacrum where these are the people who are most desperate for affection and attention. And here's this, like, we've touched on this before in another episode, but this thing that's programmed to validate you. And like, did you see that app? It was called like Friend or something.
Yes. Oh, I wrote about it. I think I might have shared it with you. For Prospect.
It's basically like a sort of ChatGPT that's designed to be your friend and watch movies with you.
You can wear it as a pendant.
Yeah, it's really bleak. And you know what else is really bleak? There is a church in Switzerland where they have made AI Jesus.
It sounds like a rap song.
So it's called Peter's Chapel. And it's this guy called Marco Schmid who's like created AI Jesus and then basically inputted the Bible in, and the idea is that people can interact with Jesus and tell him about their problems and stuff.
That's wild.
Yeah, but it's like I think the issue with it is, and I think this is probably the thing that we're all worried about, is that it's a false idol, essentially. Super. So if you're someone who is Christian, instead of taking it from what is believed to be the word, which is, you know, in the Bible, and instead you're taking it on this thing which can become corrupted, retains information about you, you know, has access to other people's problems and can also be swayed and molded by other conversations. There's also a whole bunch of other stuff, which is, which version of the Bible do you put into AI Jesus? Mm. And it's just this really, we're treading this really dangerous path where everyone's just turning to AI as the source of all truth, including religious truth. It's really dangerous.
That's the second track on the mixtape. It's going to be False Idols.
False Idols, yeah.
AI Jesus, track one. False Idols, track two. Yeah. I'll work on the track list.
Very Lana Del Rey.
It's very, yeah.
AI
very,
Jesus.
I'm not even religious remotely, but that feels deeply offensive to like, obviously, I don't know what sect of Christianity it is, if it's Catholicism.
Not one I'm familiar with.
No. But it definitely feels like hearsay?
Heresy.
Yeah, so it's crazy. This is all taking place in the oldest church in the Swiss city of Lucerne.
Lucerne?
So the installation's
called... Are you familiar with Lucerne?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Whoa. Not Lucerne. For context, my dad lives in Switzerland, so I am familiar.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, the installation is called Dues in Machina.
Whoa.
But yeah, there is loads of... There's so many issues with it, but I've got my phone up because I did a little bit of poking around and I was like, is there other stuff or are all the Swiss people just going like mental for AI Jesus over there? But there's something called Episcobot.
What?
I mean, I love the wordplay.
That's a...
Episcopal church? Episcopal church? I've had a really unreligious upbringing, in case
no,
that's really
I just,
obvious.
Yeah, no.
Episcopal.
I'm not, it's just a hard word to say.
It is hard.
Episcopal. What else was there? Oh, the other thing that's going on is the Text with Jesus app. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Like how people have AI girlfriends, but it's Jesus.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I kind of rate it.
No.
I just think it's quite meta. Like, it's quite... It's like a good bit.
But religion is not supposed to be meta. Yeah, it's not supposed to be a bit.
So true. Let me take my brain out of the sketch comedy room. That is worrying. Outside of SNL, that is worrying.
Yeah, if we were writing a South Park episode, that would be amazing.
Yeah. But that's definitely where my head's at right now.
I mean, none of us are even religious, but like, open the churches.
Yeah, that feels very offensive.
Open the churches, she says, with the cross necklace. Such a beautiful... Yeah.
And, like, great rat.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that wasn't too dark. I mean, I suppose there's a nice message in there somewhere that, I don't know, poetry, connection to nature, and the grammar and our language and the way we write should be protected, and we should be, you know, I think... We should lean into the idiosyncratic ways in which we write, even if it's not grammatically correct, even if it's not, you know, doesn't follow like certain linguistic structures. I feel like we should celebrate people's authentic and true and passionate relationship with language and with nature as a byproduct of that. And I guess in relation to what I've been talking about. But yeah, I just think, you know, less slop, more...
Yeah,
go no, on. I don't, actually don't like that.
I mean,
no, I don't like that.
I was going to say it's interesting because the less formulaic you are, and the more mistakes we make in our writing now, the more we can reject the AI allegations or disprove the AI allegations, because AI doesn't make mistakes. Well, not grammatically, because obviously it has like a system and rules.
Mm.
Whereas when we make mistakes, it's obvious that it's human. And
make more mistakes.
It's the humanity.
That's the takeaway from today, guys. Make more mistakes.
Take
that's
more strong. Space.
Yeah.
There is a very lovely quote from Jen Kaleha's Goblinhood, where she talks about, she says, "I only want writing made by a human, not necessarily for the writing, but because of what's behind it. where it came from, what it took someone to start it, rework it, and complete it. The human will to write and share one's idiosyncratic ways of thinking, feeling, and then communicating it to each other takes guts. And AI can't relate its criticism or any writing back to its childhood.
Because it doesn't have guts.
Yeah.
No guts.
Bloody clankers.
The false clankers.
That's a slur for robots.
Yeah.
Oh.
You wait,
oh.
That's going to become so problematic in a few years.
I'm going to get cancelled.
This episode's going to age horribly.
The bots are going to come for all of us.
Oh my
It's a good
days.
Thing you hid your address. Although it probably has days. Access to your address anyway, but...
It's facts. Well, thank you so much for indulging my poetic dribbling.
I loved it.
Loved it. I loved that we went from Emily Dickinson... you know, having a sort of titillating moment with the ocean all the way through
AI
to
Jesus.
AI Jesus. Yeah,
that's what you're here for. Yeah,
and thank you to the Roundhouse for having us.
Thank
as
you so
always.
Much, the Roundhouse, and to the grumbles of the underground. Yeah.
Oh,
there it is.
Did you hear that?
Play me.
Wow. It does sound like thunder.
It does sound like thunder.
It's just the Northern Line. Don't worry, pets.
Don't worry.
Don't worry.
Thank you so much.
Gorgeous. Thanks, Em.